Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Today's guest is one of my executive function coaching clients, Helena Bowen. Helena is a speaker coach and a speech writer, and she supports speakers for TED, TEDx, and other major events. She has ADHD and came on Focus Forward to share her experience and what she's learned about herself and her brain over the years. We talk about how Helena is learning to move beyond the frustrating and self-critical thought, "I know what to do, so why can't I just do it?" Through coaching and her own experiments and data collection, she is shifting away from viewing her struggles as character flaws and instead getting curious about what's really going on. You'll hear Helena describe how she discovered what looked like task initiation challenges were actually self-regulation challenges, moments of getting stuck while avoiding the difficult emotions that came up when faced with certain tasks. She opens up about the creative and often unexpected strategies that help her follow through, timers everywhere, mood tracking with the How We Feel app, absurdly tiny task breakdowns, and even art supplies and a foundation brush that help her outsmart her own brain and build systems that actually work for her. Doing things differently is part of being neurodivergent, and Helena rocks it, and then some. I'm super excited to share this conversation. I'm just so proud of Helena and the work she's done for herself in coaching over the last year and a half. I hope you'll see something of yourself in Helena's story, feel less alone, and maybe even feel brave enough to try something different. I know I have personally learned a lot from her approach to her executive function challenges, so I hope you do too. Let's get on with the show. Helena, welcome to Focus Forward. Yay.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you are here too. So I spend about 45 minutes every week with Helena because she's one of my clients, and I just had to have her come on. Have you come on? Because I noticed I kept sharing your tools and your strategies with my other clients and also with the people that are part of our motivation and productivity program. And so I thought, okay, I got to get you on so people can learn straight from the horse's mouth, as they say. But you are not
straight
a horse.
Straight from the source.
Straight from the source. There we go.
There we go.
That's a better thing. So will you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, I'm Helena Bowen. I'm a speaker coach and a speech writer, and I specialize in high pressure, very public facing talks like TED Talks or speaking at the UN, big business speeches with companies like Disney and Visa. And before that, I worked in TV. So I worked at HBO on shows like Game of Thrones and Chernobyl and Euphoria. And before that, a ton of like Lifetime, Hallmark, Christmas, cute, low budge stuff.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of experience being like on kind of the both sides of it. You see what you see the behind the scenes, but then you also have to get people ready for what's going to be out there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think that's actually a good lesson for all of us, is to realize just how much preparation goes into a lot of these things. A lot of people think TED speakers just roll up on stage and just give an amazing speech. And that is not the case at all. Like with almost every single TED and TEDx speaker that I'm working with them for like 2 to 3 months in advance.
Wow. Yeah. And that is, I'm glad you said that too, because I feel like so often we want to just jump into the thing, right? We want to just do the thing. But as we're going to talk about today, it really does benefit you to take the time to prepare and learn. Yeah. So why did you reach out for coaching?
Sure. So I had started my own business about 9 years ago, and I didn't really know anything about running a business, but I had seen that my mom was a small business owner growing up. She's a veterinarian and she just is a solo operator. So she would go around, you know, collecting money from her clients, and it wasn't that big of a deal. But obviously business has become much more complicated now with the online world and, you know, courses and programs and masterminds. And I had spent tens of thousands of dollars over the last 9 years learning all these things about business. But I felt like a lack of business knowledge wasn't really the problem in my business. I felt like I was the problem in my business. Like I'm very good at what I do. I feel very confident as a speech writer, and I feel like I know more or less how I could run my business. Like the problem wasn't that I didn't know what to do. It was like actually getting myself to do it. So I didn't really even know executive functioning coaching was a thing, but I'd worked with Casey Davis on her TED Talk, How to Do Laundry When You're Depressed. And I really resonated with a ton of what I learned from her about executive function skills. And then I heard Hannah on her podcast. I think it's called Struggle Care. And I thought, this is exactly what I'm looking for. So I reached out, and that was a little over a year ago, and I've never looked back. Yeah.
Yay. Yes. Oh God, that was such a great experience for me being on Struggle Care.
Oh.
Casey is great, and what a cool way for us to get connected too. But
Yeah.
yeah, I felt the same way when I read her book. I was just like, yes, this is it. This is everything for people who are, really struggling. Or even if you're
Yeah.
not, it's just such a nice, compassionate approach to that the taking care of your
I
space and
can't imagine that anyone's not struggling. I don't know.
yeah,
Like,
right?
yeah, I
Isn't
just
this the
feel.
common existence?
Yeah, I think, I mean, she talks a lot about how she, this really kicked off for her during the pandemic. And I think that's so relatable. The ironic thing to me in hindsight is I actually worked on a TED Talk. Oh gosh, I think it was in like 2017, maybe. So several years before I met Casey, I worked on a very viral TED Talk about executive function skills. And I remember when I first talked to her and she pitched me the talk, and I didn't even know what the term executive function meant. Like I'd never heard of it before. And then some other people at TED were like, oh yeah, that's all the rage. Like everyone's thinking about executive function. And I was kind of embarrassed because I was like, I'm not thinking about it. I've never heard of it. But I feel like even though I worked on this talk about it, I didn't like get it until I heard Casey explain it.
Yeah, it's true. And what's one thing that's cool that I've noticed is that, like, when I first started working as an executive function coach, when people would ask me what I did, they would not know what executive functions were when I mentioned that. And then, but now I've noticed now, like, way more people now are like, oh, yeah, I know all about that. So, yeah, it's very cool how that is changing. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you have ADHD. Tell me your
Yeah.
ADHD story.
Yeah. So I had no idea I had ADHD until relatively recently. And I think it was kind of like having my business that brought it to the front because obviously, as a kid, you're in school, you have like the structure of school. And then when you're in college, you have the structure of college. And then when I was working for other people, I had their structure. So I used to work on set, and then eventually I started working at the studio at HBO, and then I started volunteering on the side for all these TEDx events. So I had other people's structure enforced on me and kind of like their accountability. And then once I started working for myself, I really just felt like I was having a hard time. Even though I loved the work, it's just, I don't know. I felt kind of like all over the place and like frustrated with myself about not being able to actually get stuff done without someone else holding me accountable. And by then I'd been in therapy for years, and like I remember my therapist told me, she was like, I'm putting generalized anxiety disorder on the form, but like I don't really know. We're just gonna put that on there. Don't overthink it. And I was like, okay. And so a lot of people had said, oh, maybe you have anxiety, maybe you have depression, but that never really felt quite right. And then I was in a very early adopter, of TikTok before the pandemic. And I'd started getting all these videos about ADHD, like so many other people now have talked about. And my initial reaction was like, no way, because I had the stereotype in my mind of this hyperactive boy running around a classroom and spilling things and just the class clown, which was not me at all. I was like the perfect, like very good girl student who was terrified of doing anything wrong and getting in trouble. So then I started doing my own research about ADHD, especially on Reddit, and I came across a bunch of threads and started putting together this giant bulleted list. And I was like, oh my God, all of this rings true, and it kind of explains all of these things that I was having a hard time with, including the anxiety. And in hindsight, I don't really feel like it was anxiety. I think it was just ADHD. So I finally called up a psychiatrist. They made me do a test, and then that was it. And it just made perfect sense in hindsight.
Nice. I
Yeah.
love that you made up a giant bulleted list because that is so you.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I was like copying and pasting all of these things where I was like, oh my God, this is my impression of ADHD is totally different than what it actually is.
Love it. I love it. So, that reminds me of the first day that we met, and you were talking about how you mostly struggled with getting started, getting things done. And I remember you were trying to figure out how you could break tasks down, do things, maybe not feel like you had to do something in one whole sitting. And if I think now how you are and what you've learned over the last year and a few months, it really goes right along with that story you just told, because you are such a researcher and such a gatherer of data. And so I love that I'm imagining you've probably been like that your entire life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably is true. Especially, I mean, this is typically ADHD too, is like when I get onto something, I will just go down a total wormhole for like hours or weeks or months on it and just investigating it in every way possible. And I've always been very curious about myself, which sounds narcissistic, but I think I'm always trying to figure out how I do things and why I do things and how I can do things better. And so investigating myself, I suppose, is one of the best things to do.
Yeah, I love it. Which is what we're gonna talk about today,
Yeah.
basically at the heart of it. Yeah. So one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on was because of how you approach change, be approach behavior change. So you identify a challenge, and then, and pretty much in every session, you say like, okay, I think this is what I want to look into. Like, this is what I want to try. And I love how many different ways that you have developed to really get to the heart of what's going on, and then you make change based on that, which I love. It's just so cool. I feel like so many people that I see, including myself, we just, like we were saying before, we just want to get to it. We just want to do the thing. But when you do take the time to gather that data and do that preparation, you have such a richer, more just more engaged experience. So, if something that we do a lot is, and what you do a lot is data collection, right? You're really, really into data collection, which is so cool. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, but Helena really takes data collection to another level. And the benefits that you have seen from doing that are just, I mean, it's quite a long list of benefits that you've really learned a lot about yourself through all of that. So start somewhere, pick
Yeah.
something and tell the listeners about your adventures in data collection.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because when we were first talking about this podcast, when you even presented the idea of data collection to me, I don't even know if I really realized that's what I was doing. The way that you describe it sounds so fancy and so formal, but in my mind, it's like very sloppy and experimental and informal. But yeah, I think the interesting thing about data collection or collecting data on yourself is for me, it's become a really great way to trick myself into actually doing things or not doing things because then the data collection is kind of the goal and I can do hard stuff because I want to have the data. So one really good example that was one of the first things I think I learned from you is what you call the budgeted versus actual BVA. And when I first came to you, when I looked at all the different executive functioning skills, I really thought what I had was a task initiation problem. So I remember cleaning out my house, finding all these old journals and folders, and I realized I had some stuff on my to-do list for literally like a decade. Like I would just copy something over from one to-do list to the next, to the next, to the next. And I was like, oh my God, I have all of these amazing ideas, but I just can't actually execute on them. I never get stuff done. And I thought a lot of that was just starting task initiation. And I had this experience of just procrastinating for months or years on a task. And then when I finally was forced to do that task, usually because of some kind of external accountability, a lot of times I realized it wasn't that big of a deal. And I am still constantly having this experience. The other day I had filed an extension on my 2023 taxes, and then I filed an extension on my 2024 taxes, and then my accountant was totally getting on my case, and the only thing I had left to do was just sort my business expenses. And I thought it was going to take hours and hours and hours. I thought I'd have to clear a whole day for it. And then, of course, it took about 8 minutes. So you had taught me to create a budgeted versus actual form, a BVA. And the budgeted part is just basically guessing how long it'll take you. Like, what do you think it will take you to accomplish? And then you time it. And then the actual is how long did it actually take? And you compare that and answer and learn from it. And I really love using Google Forms. So I made a Google Form for myself with that. And it was, the learnings were so funny. It was so just immediate to see that I almost always dramatically overestimate how long things are going to take.
Quite dramatically.
Quite dramatically.
I remember once you told me you thought something was going to take 6 hours and it took you 1 hour.
Yeah,
That's a
yes.
bit, you got 5 free hours.
I know. And this happens all the time. Like some of the first things I remember using the BVA for were cleaning, because cleaning is something I don't really resist. It's something that is one of my great procrastination tools. Like when I should be working on work, I'll just clean my apartment. And I remember the one of the cleaning tasks that I always avoid is cleaning the stovetop or cleaning the microwave, because both of those to me in my mind take forever. Like it's just such a tedious task. And so very early on, I decided to do a BVA for the stove. I estimated that it would take about 20 minutes, timed it, and it took 4 minutes.
Which is
And
how long it
then,
also took me when I timed myself.
yes, yeah. Like 4 minutes is nothing. Same thing with the microwave. I thought it would take at least like 10, 15 minutes, and it took 2 minutes to clean it. And I was just, it's just shocking, because like once you know that, I don't like go around memorizing how long it takes to accomplish things in my house, but it gives me no reason to put off cleaning the stove, because it actually is probably quicker to clean my stove than a lot of the other stuff that I don't resist at all. Yeah.
So then you evolved the BVA because just collecting the time is not quite enough, right, for you. How did
So I
that
had,
evolve?
yeah. So I think what I evolved was I added questions on what I thought the experience would be like, and whether, and then in the end to see whether it was harder or easier than I thought. And so often, I would say the majority of things are easier than I thought they were. And once I get started on it, it's really just not a problem. And then I've also just become completely obsessed with timers. So I have physical timers everywhere in my house. I bought so many of them. And it's a great reminder, because then I never forget that I can do a BVA to get myself into something.
Yeah, somebody asked, we were talking about this the other day in, I don't remember, I think it was in, it must have been in a, I think it was in a work sprint for MAP. We were talking about timing ourselves, and somebody asked how you remember to time yourself, and also how do you remember to stop the timer? So I shared your advice about having timers everywhere. So how do you remember, like, what advice do you have to other, in addition to having timers everywhere? What advice do you have for listeners?
Yeah. Well, I have several different types of timers too. So I have like a normal, stopwatchy type timers. I have those timer cubes that I love, 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 love having, because they basically have a different number on every side of the cube, and you flip it on which side that you want. And so it makes timing something just so quick. So I can literally in a second add, like, create a 30-minute timer basically. And the reason why I love those as opposed to on my phone is the phone, I would constantly forget that it was running. Like, I would then open up my phone and see that I had had a timer running for like 3 days. So the phone didn't work for me for multiple reasons. One, I would leave it running way too long. Two, I would like start the timer, but then because I'm already in my phone, then I'm distracted by my phone and wanting to do phone related things. So having the physical time is helpful. And also like just having them on my person. A lot of times I'll just literally have a little small timer in my pocket.
That's awesome. I
And
love
I just
it.
remember it's there.
So the other day, in that same conversation, I suggested which I thought maybe was something that you had mentioned, but so tell me if this sounds familiar. She was asking, like I don't want to forget to turn it off. And so I suggested setting it for the time that she thinks it's going to take. So then if you finish before that, then the timer hasn't gone off yet, then you'll be like, oh, then I'll check. And then if the timer goes off, then at least you know, okay, it takes at least an hour or whatever it is that you set the timer for.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I often have two timers running, which sounds ridiculous, but like if I want to know how long something takes, but I don't want to like forget that it's running, sometimes I'll set one to like the stopwatch mode, so it's counting up, and then I'll have another timer that's counting down. So I'll one might go off and I'll know, okay, well 30 minutes has passed.
That's awesome. That's very cool. Yeah, and that's really great for people who might have some time blindness that makes it difficult for them to estimate the passage of time or just like completely lose track of time. So that little alerting reminder, like time is passing. 30 minutes have now passed. Yeah,
And
that's
I
cool.
actually, the timers, as much as it's been helpful for BVA, it's just been helpful in so many aspects of my life because I do feel like I have time blindness for sure. And having so many timers has really helped me get out of the house on time because I used to be one of those people who was like routinely, 30 minutes or an hour late to meeting up with friends. And just knowing that I can set a timer for when I should leave, and then I can just do whatever I need to do. I don't need to worry about it because I know the timer is going to tell me when to leave.
And for me, I like to use timers because I would have this anxiety that I was going to be late for something because I don't like to be late. So I set a timer to allow myself to get into a deeply into a task because I know I'm not going to lose track of time because that timer is going to go off at some point and kind of get me out of the focus mode that I'm in.
I definitely had that problem where I would feel like a lot of people jokingly call it ADHD waiting mode, where I feel like I can't do something because I know that I have to get ready to leave in an hour or two, and so I just wouldn't start anything. But now I know I have a timer set. It's gonna alert me. I can get totally engrossed in a task and not worry about the time myself.
Cool. Great. So what else have you learned about why you were having trouble getting started? Was it task initiation?
Well, yes. I think task initiation still is one of my difficulties. So one of the things we talked about creating in addition to the BBA was just starting to collect data on why I'm avoiding a task. And I initially, with a lot of these tasks that I'm avoiding, it's kind of like a hand on a hot stove reaction. Like I don't even overthink what I'm avoiding. I just don't do it. I just don't want to do it. And like, that's that. And so I can go days or weeks or whatever avoiding a task without really thinking deeply about it because the only thing in my brain is no, like,
No.
I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So we created a form to start figuring out why I'm avoiding different things and try to distinguish, like, what are the different reasons? Because maybe if there's different reasons for why I'm avoiding things. Perhaps there's like different solutions for those things. So we created a list of all the reasons why I commonly avoid stuff. One is being overwhelmed. Another is that I find the task boring. Another is that I feel guilty or ashamed for something. So a lot of times that means like I had told someone I would finish it by Friday and now it's the following Friday and I just feel really bad for letting them down. And a lot of times it's also that I'm confused on a task. So we made a list of all these different reasons why I might be avoiding something and just decided to start tracking those. And really, the big lesson that I learned from tracking those things is that all of my task avoidance is actually just feeling avoidance. Like I'm really not avoiding the task most of the time. I'm avoiding the feeling that the task creates. So, and that especially is true when I'm feeling guilty or ashamed about something. And ironically, like if I'm late with a client or just late in general, I will then avoid the task even more, which makes me even more late. And it just is like the cycle that where I feel more and more and more and more guilty and ashamed as time goes by. So once we'd figured out that this task avoidance was really feeling avoidance, that meant that I can dig deeper into those feelings and start figuring out a better solution. So that's when we kind of combined my task avoidance form with the asking five whys. So you ask yourself why once, and then you ask yourself why another five times after you've journaled on it. And basically, I realized once I can dig into those feelings, identify why I'm avoiding, what the feeling is that I'm avoiding, and then dig into those feelings, a lot of times I could find a really obvious or easy solution. For example, like if I'm feeling overwhelmed, a lot of the times I've realized once I start journaling on it, and journaling is kind of, it sounds like a big word. Really, I'm talking about writing for maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah.
For example, if I'm overwhelmed, a lot of times I realized I was trying to bite off way more than I could chew in one sitting, or that I wasn't breaking things down. So, like, one of the first things that I remember learning from Hannah was we were talking about me writing speeches, and she had asked me, what is the first step in writing a speech? And I think I said something like creating an outline. And then you said, no, actually, the first step in writing a speech is like finding your computer. And that was funny to me because I face no resistance whatsoever to finding my computer. I don't resist finding my computer. I don't resist turning my computer on. I don't resist like opening a Word doc. Like there's several small steps that I could do that put me on the path towards writing a speech that I don't resist at all. So when I know identify the feeling of being overwhelmed, I realize that one of the best things I can do is break it into small, often hilariously small tasks. And one of the tools you mentioned to me that I've used since is called one of the tools that you had mentioned to me that I've used since is called Goblin Tools, I think is what it is. And it's and ChatGPT is great for this as well, but it can reduce something on your to-do list into like 50 steps. And so a lot of times I'll use that to get myself back on the path. Another example is like oftentimes if I'm feeling confused, it's just because it's been maybe a few days or a few weeks since a client call and I just have forgotten what is going on. And honestly, like all I need to do is just open up my notes, review my notes really quickly. Sometimes it only takes a minute and then I know exactly what I have to do and I'm no longer confused.
Yeah, you told that story, I think, in our last session about how you had been avoiding something for so long because you felt really confused about it, but then you realized you were confused because you hadn't actually looked at the script yet. So you didn't even know what was in there. So you were anxious about something that you didn't even know anything about.
It's so funny. Like once you start really paying attention to those feelings in just the most microscopic way, a lot of times the solutions are both obvious and easy.
And that rem that this it's so funny because when you think about someone talking about feelings, you might think, oh, that's therapy. But in this way, we are using feelings as Susan David says, the psychologist Susan David, she says emotions are data. And so we're using that data to say, what's the next step? Like, how can I use these emotion? We're not trying to like figure out necessarily like anything to do with our inner child or why this happened or how we got here, but how can we take these emotions as a message, as data, and then use them to do the thing?
Yeah, that's so true. And I think one of the best things you put me onto is an app called How We Feel. You know, interestingly, I remember trying it years ago, but I never really stuck. I didn't really know why I should be using it or how to use it. And basically it's a mood tracking app. So there's four different categories of emotions color coded. So you have high energy pleasant, which is yellow, which are things like you're feeling inspired or you're feeling productive. There's low energy pleasant, which are this like nice green color, which are things like feeling relaxed or grateful. There's high energy unpleasant, which are things like feeling overwhelmed or embarrassed or angry. And that's red, of course. And then there's low energy unpleasant, which are things like tired, sad, depressed, hopeless. Those are blue. And so basically, you pick an emotion. And then it'll ask you a few quick questions. So you tag what you're doing. So you will say like, okay, I'm working, I'm cleaning, I'm watching TikTok, I'm recording a podcast. You'll tag who you're with. So in this case, I would tag you. And then you tag where you are. So I'm at home right now. And then the cool thing about it is it gives you all of these amazing data visualizations over time. So it'll start telling you, like, oh, most of the time when you're with Hannah, you're in a good mood. Most of the time when you're procrastinating, you're in a horrible mood. Most of the time you're outside, you're in a relaxed mood. And it really starts to make you think about your days in your life in this interesting, different way. And there are really a few different things that I learned from it. So, one, the biggest thing is that emotions are so hilariously, comically fleeting. I know
Yes.
I've heard people say this about meditation before, about how, like, oh, your thoughts are like clouds and they dissipate. And, I can never get myself into meditation for whatever reason, but that concept of emotions being fleeting has just been proved to me time and time again, because so often I will be having what I think is a horrible day, and I will register it as like heartbroken, angry, furious, upset. And then like 2 hours later, I'm like relaxed. And I'll look back, I'll scroll back and look at what has been happening, and I'll be like, whoa, like when was I enraged? And then oftentimes I'll click on it and I'll be like, oh, huh, yeah, that's like not a big deal
That's
anymore.
right. I forgot about that. I forgot that that
Yeah,
thing
literally, that
happened.
happens all the time.
Yeah.
And there are also, there have been times where like I've been having what is like I would consider like a horrible day. Like a few months ago, my cat passed away. And that was like the worst thing that I could imagine happening to me, honestly. And but interestingly, like my emotions were all over the place, in both good and bad ways. Like I would have, 1 hour where I was feeling like loving and grateful, and 1 hour where I was feeling like heartbroken, and another hour where I was honestly like feeling happy. And I think it has made me more resilient to realize that like whatever I'm going through in any moment is probably pretty short-lived, for better or for worse. Like if I'm really, really happy, I probably won't be really happy for that long. And if I'm really sad, I probably won't be really that sad for that long. The other
Yeah.
thing I learned is that, related to that, because emotions are so fleeting, I would have this feeling a lot of times that, a day was quote unquote ruined. So like if I had slept in late, or I'd, woken up and immediately got on TikTok and spent like 2 hours scrolling on TikTok, I would kind of beat myself up for like, you've ruined the day. Like there's no coming back from this.
Right from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Oh.
like this app has really helped me realize that there's like no such thing as a ruined day. And oftentimes those days that I've quote unquote ruined, I then later in the day bounce back and I'm like super productive and I get tons of stuff done. But it's shown me that at any time you can kind of reset and just, restart whatever you were doing and go in a different direction. The other thing that I've learned is that all of this time when I've been thinking that I hate my job and I hate work and I need a new career and whatever, it's not actually the work itself that I hate. It's just procrastination.
Yeah.
Because most of the time when I pay really close attention to what I'm doing and how I'm feeling, the times when I feel miserable are when I'm procrastinating and avoiding a task. And when I'm doing work, most of the time I'm actually happy. So that's been a really interesting learning too. I honestly could not say enough. We could talk about this app for
We
6 hours.
could. It's true. It's
I would be
true.
happy to talk about it, but I'm, I don't do streaks. I'm t like famously unreliable and inconsistent, but I think I now have like a 280-day streak or something. Like
Awesome.
it's I just love this app so much.
Yeah, I know. I love it for you. And I also I did get a streak of 100 and something, but then I lost it one day, and oh, that's death to streaks for me, is just missing one day. But I had a similar experience where I just learned so much. I learned not to schedule meetings if I can between like after 4 p.m. I learned not to do podcast interviews like any later than 1:30 or 2 at the max. And then I learned, one major thing that I learned was I was making my mornings more difficult for myself by thinking about the rest of my day. And so I noticed that
weekday mornings were often red. And then when I looked to see what I was doing during the red, it we'd usually say thinking about my day, thinking about my upcoming day. And then so it was ruining my morning, but then when I looked at my emotion reports, feeling reports for the day, none of them were red. They were all fine. It was the same thing. It was like the anticipation of it was worse than the actual experience. And so now I have learned I'm not allowed to think about my day when I get ready. I just get ready and then I just do my day. And it has changed everything. So, yeah, I
That is
know.
fascinating.
Yeah, so if anybody's interested in how we feel, you can search for it on, and Google Play or on the Apple Store. And it was created by Ben Silberman, who is the founder of Pinterest, which is cool because I know you're a big Pinterest
I
fan.
love Pinterest.
Yes. And also Mark Brackett, Dr. Mark Brackett, who is the head of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. And so that's how I found out about the app originally. Dr. Mark Brackett based it on his mood meter. So if anybody's heard of the mood meter, the How We Feel app is based on the mood meter. And it's so great for emotion tracking and also for emotional literacy, learning the different words for the different emotions that we feel, which allows you to get deeper into what you really need in that moment. So I highly recommend it. It's completely free. It's not ad supported, and it is beautiful.
Yeah, it is. I think that's half of what I, as you said, I love Pinterest. I just care deeply about art, and I think the fact that it's a beautiful app made me want to use it more.
Yeah.
But also the fact that it's done by, it's a research organization and it's not some sort of subscription where they're using your data for God knows what. Like that gave me a lot of trust in the app as well.
We both have just nothing but amazing things to say about it. So,
Yeah.
yeah,
But
yay.
I think your point about identifying emotions is so true, and that really has helped too with my task avoidance form, because so often if you just asked me before this app, like, how do you feel? I would just say overwhelmed or sad or frustrated. But the app has really forced me to get way, way, way more granular. And also the funniest thing is realizing how complex our emotions are. And sometimes I can be some emotion that seems completely opposing. Like you're allowed to pick two emotions at the same time in the app. So I might be like heartbroken and relieved at the same time, or I might be like angry and relaxed, which doesn't seem like it's possible, but sometimes that's exactly how I feel, is angry and relaxed.
I saw that a lot, like before I, because I do so many public-facing things like presentations and webinars, I noticed that. I mean, I had heard that being anxious and excited feels the same in your body. And when I was using How We Feel regularly, I would often select anxious and excited right before I was about to, go into a presentation. So yeah, it's true. We can feel what seem like opposing emotions, but actually, when you think about it, you're like, oh, that actually does make sense. Oh, yeah.
I love it. It's just one of the best things you've put me onto. I recommend it
Yay.
really everyone.
Yeah, me too. All right, so I want to go back to something that I heard you mention a few times that I'm sure listeners are going to be able to relate to, is TikTok. Tell me about, like, I'm not a TikToker. Are they called TikTokers? Okay. I'm not a TikToker. It is a self-preservation decision. I have Instagram, but I use the app 1 sec, which makes me pause for quite a bit of time before I can open the app. And most times it is a pain in the ass that it makes me do that, but it also keeps me off of Instagram. So, but so I don't have TikTok, but you did something so cool with your TikTok data collection, and you learned such interesting stuff. So will you tell the listeners about this? It's so cool, you guys.
So this was a very recent data gathering project. I love TikTok so much. I've learned so much from it. Like I think a lot of the public commentary on, oh, it's just a dumb app for teenagers dancing is not true. Like I've just learned so many incredible practical strategies that I use for my own life, including the fact that I have ADHD. Like I think I initially came across Casey Davis through TikTok or through another TikToker as well.
Cool.
So I I really do think it has added tremendous value to my life. And also, it is my number one tool for procrastination. Like, I'm so bad about getting off of a client call and just immediately opening my phone. And without even thinking about it, I'm, then an hour deep in scrolling on TikTok. And the problem is, like, I've tried all sorts of apps, including the one that you just mentioned, and I would just get so used to the app or get so used to the screen time limit that I would just unconsciously click through it. And so it felt like I wasn't even making a conscious choice to use TikTok. It was like my brain deciding to use it for me, whether I wanted to or not. And so I decided I was going to get really granular and just start understanding like when and why I was using TikTok, because then maybe I could come up with a better solution than these screen limit apps that I would just click out of. And so I created a printed form where I basically put how long am I going to scroll for? So maybe I'm going to scroll for 10 minutes. So I would set a timer for 10 minutes and then boxes for tally marks. So I would put like how many photos are good or how many videos are good, how many would I consider meh, how many are bad, and how many are ads. And so then my scrolling would become a little experiment. So I would set the timer for 10 minutes. I would start scrolling, make all these tally marks. And one of the big lessons for me is that a lot of the content is ads now. Like,
Yes.
especially if you live in the US, like a quarter of the content is ads, which is unfortunate. But I also, an interesting thing that I learned once I was tracking is that TikTok wouldn't say this, but clearly they are front loading good content because I noticed there's kind of this diminishing return the longer you're in the app. Like I would start off with maybe, several videos that I thought were good or interesting, and then it felt like the content was slipping over time. And that was super helpful for me to know because obviously TikTok is designed to be kind of like a slot machine where you never know what's coming next. And I think I both consciously and unconsciously had this feeling that if I just kept swiping, I would get more good stuff. And I realized that if they're front loading the good content or the content that I like, then that means that I could just scroll for 10 minutes and it would be just as satisfying or more satisfying than if I was scrolling for an hour. So that really helped me cut down how long I was doing it for because I know that, yeah, I can still enjoy TikTok. I don't want to get rid of it entirely for my life, but I can enjoy it in shorter bursts and get just as much out of it. The other thing that I learned when I was tracking the content, because I also tracked what time of day I was scrolling, and I realized that I almost always like the content better at night. Which if you'd asked me that before collecting the data, I would have guessed that TikTok is just the same 24/7. Like it just is what it is. But I realized that the content, or at least in my opinion, was way higher quality at night, which helped me realize that it's not really worth it to scroll in the morning or during the workday because it's not going to be what I want anyway. So I'm better off like actually doing work during worker hours. Ha ha. Not because that's what I should do, but because like if I just wait until later in the day, my TikTok feed is going to be higher
Yeah,
quality.
it's gonna be so good.
Yeah, it's like a little reward at the end of the day. So, I think that's what's been really interesting about it is like I'm not trying to get rid of TikTok entirely, but starting to pay attention to, what the content is like when I'm scrolling, and then also just what are the triggers? So, like, why am I opening up TikTok? And I realized one of the biggest ones is right after I get off of a client call and I don't have another call right after it because I'm done with the client call. Maybe I've sent them a quick email or whatever afterwards, but then I haven't thought through what is my next move. And so very often I will just instinctively open TikTok because it's just an easy thing to do. And then that's when I'll get myself into an hour of TikTok and I'm, practically late for my next client call. So recognizing what the triggers are has been really helpful in me cutting down my use to more like what I want it to be.
That's really cool. Yeah, and that's such a great example of how of inertia, like in inertia in real life. Like TikTok ended up being that friction that just stopped you in your tracks. When if you had something to bridge you to the next activity, then you're going to be able to keep on moving with that motivation that you have coming off of that call. Unless It is a really heavy call, of course, and then you are
Yeah.
exhausted and you really do need a break, in which case, like you said, it does play a role. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that the big lesson from all of this quote unquote data collection, which sounds so fancy still, the big lesson is that very often what I think is reality is not reality. And what I think is the problem is not the problem. And when you can really get super ridiculously granular on what the problem is, then you can come up with way better solutions that actually work for your life and your life only.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so tell me about some of your favorite solutions. What strategies do you use?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we kind of mentioned earlier with the timers is that I realized that one of the biggest problems I have is what I would call out of sight, out of mind, which is very typical of ADHD. But an example is that I've tried so many different to-do list apps. I've tried Asana, I've tried Trello, I've tried Notion, I've tried Remember the Milk, all of these different things. And the problem I have is I will wake up in the morning, I will go upstairs to start working, and I will completely forget that that app even exists. Even if it's bookmarked on the homepage of my computer, like until I've opened my computer and hopefully then navigated to that tab, I will completely forget about it. And so, none of that ever worked for me. And basically, I realized that I need something physical and tangible and, able to travel with me everywhere I go. So instead of using Asana or Google Sheets to track my clients, I started using physical note cards. So I bring this little stack of physical co note cards everywhere with me
I love
because
it.
it's in my face, it's there, I can put it somewhere to remind myself, and
And that's
I'm
our
never
show
going to
for
forget about
today.
it, unlike those apps.
I remember that first conversation. It was fairly soon after we met, and you were just about to head out on a trip, and I think you were going to Europe.
Yeah.
And you were saying, well, I don't know what to do because I use these note cards and I have this little box that they go in, and the system works really well for me, so I don't want to stop using it. And then we were like, well, why can't you bring the box with you? And then we came up with like, and you were like, yeah, let me try it. And the
Yeah.
rest is
And
history.
that was such a hilarious, simple realization to me because it never occurred to me that I could bring this little wooden box around with me. I mean, it's not that big, but like,
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is something that lives at my house. Same thing with the timers. Like, you early on encouraged me, like, if something works for you when you're working, just bring it with you when you're traveling. It's not that big. Like, so now whenever I travel, I bring this little wooden box, I bring my note cards, I bring one physical timer, and I bring my cell phone holder. And
I love it. Yeah.
yeah.
And you travel a lot, so
I travel a lot for work.
it
Yeah. I mean, that's
works.
another example of the out of sight, out of mind thing is I would come up with these great systems that worked really well for me at home. And then I would have to travel for either for work or for fun. And I, without the reminder of seeing the system, I would completely forget about it.
Yeah,
And so
I
that
know.
system would totally fall apart. So now I just bring the system with me.
I love it.
Works.
All right, so what you are popular, you are famous, I should say, in our morning in our motivation and productivity program for your task bingo. So you
Yeah.
have to tell the listeners about task bingo.
Yeah. So basically, I realized that one of the problems I have with to-do lists is often that I feel too much pressure to go in order if they're linear. And I would get stressed out and overly perfectionistic about making the list and like, do I have everything? Is it in the right order? Et cetera, et cetera. So I started making these bingo cards where I would just fill in all the information randomly on a bingo card, and then I would start coloring it off as time went on. And I realized that was an incredible way of getting stuff done because A, it would get me out of that like perfectionistic mindset because things were kind of scattered all over the card. And then B, it would help me do what I would call productive procrastination, whereas like if I'm not working on work, I can still work on other little tasks like, folding my laundry or Roomba-ing my living room or whatever. And I would be really encouraged to do all those silly little tasks because it was satisfying to check it off the bingo
Yes.
card. So I ended up being so much more productive. Even when I was procrastinating, I was getting more stuff done because of the bingo card. And then that bingo card evolved because I got a set of acrylic paint pens, which I love, 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 love. And I started coloring the bingo cards with those paint pens. And it sounds silly, but like the enjoyment of using the paint paint pen made me want to do more tasks just so I could color it. And then I was like, I should just make a coloring sheet. So I started making these coloring sheets that then became an evolution of Task Bingo. So basically, I would draw in Sharpie like all of these different shapes. And now it's gotten very complex where like I'm currently working on one that is all these different barnyard animals and fruits and stuff. And I would create this drawing in Sharpie, and then I would label all the different shapes with tasks, big and small. And sometimes it's like a bigger shaped animal would be a bigger task, whereas a smaller animal would be a smaller task. And then that becomes my to-do list, is a coloring sheet of Sharpie animals.
I
And
love
that
it.
has been amazing because it forces me to, actually get stuff done because I want the enjoyment of coloring in the coloring sheet.
And I love how you made like a big task into a flower. So then you had the individual steps of the big task as the to make up the entire flower. So then it was satisfying to color the whole flower.
Exactly. And it forces me to break things down. So like right now, the one that I'm working on, it has a barn, and all the different slats of the barn are like one big task, but each
So
slat
cool.
is its own task.
So cool. Yeah, I love it. And if you're listening and you want to try this, you do not have to be the amazing artist that Helena is.
Yeah, let
I
me
can
just
do
put it this way. It's lovely to hear you say that I'm an amazing artist, but these definitely look like a child drew them. So,
it. Well, they're great. But you
thank
could
you.
also just use any like circles, hearts, stars, squares, which is kind of how you started, right? Just
I mean, I think
even
you could
this
also
organic
even,
shapes.
yeah, I think you could even just buy a children's coloring book and just
Yeah.
label the shapes yourself.
Yeah,
Go with you.
right. Yeah, I love it. That's great. Anything else? What's something else you'd
Well,
want to share?
another in the out of sight, out of mind category that I learned from our dear friend Casey Davis is that just because you do something one way doesn't mean that, or just because someone else does something one way doesn't mean you have to. So one example is that I live in a townhouse, and every morning my cats basically wake me up, and I have to then go upstairs and feed them. And then I work on that same floor in the living room. And so I rarely go back down to my bedroom after, like, there's 12 seconds of me waking in my bedroom, and then I usually won't go down until later in the day. And so I would end up not doing any of my skincare or sunscreen or even brushing my teeth until the afternoon, just because I would forget about it because I wouldn't be in my bedroom. And so I remember, I think it was either in her TED Talk or her book, I remember her talking about having toothbrushes elsewhere in the house. So I ended up buying duplicates of my skincare and my toothbrushes, and now I have them in three different places in my house. And what usually ends up happening is I'm usually doing my skincare and putting on sunscreen in the kitchen sink, because that is where I am first thing in the day when I'm feeding the cats and getting ready and making my coffee and all of that. And then the other evolution to that too is, and this is an example of how getting really, really, really granular on the problem is helpful, is that I would always end up just not putting sunscreen on. I would be good about doing my skincare, and then I should just finish it off and put on sunscreen, but I wouldn't do it. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, why do I'm so bad about putting on sunscreen? But I knew it wasn't just laziness because I was doing the rest of my skincare. And then I realized what it was is I just hate the texture of sunscreen. I think it's really gross, and like I hate the fact that it's then gonna stick to my hands. And even when I wash my hands, it somehow feels like it's still on my hands. And so I saw a tip from someone on TikTok talking about using a foundation brush to put sunscreen on, particularly like in this case, it was for children who don't want to get sunscreened.
It's a good
But I
idea.
was like, oh my God, I can do that myself. So I bought some like cheap foundation brushes at CVS and put them with my sunscreen. And I have had like a 100% hit rate with sunscreen since
That is
then.
awesome. I love it. Your future self will thank you dearly for that TikTok, or will thank TikTok for that. Yeah.
I mean, I think really it's just like this bigger lesson of like getting so specific on why
Yeah.
having a problem or why you're not doing something, because the answer is rarely laziness. A lot of
Yeah.
times it's just some bizarre thing, like you don't like the texture of sunscreen. And there's, I could think of 30 other solutions for that. You know, I mean, the foundation brush is a good one, but like, I could also like buy a sunscreen stick, or I could like apply it wearing gloves or something. There's plenty of
Yep.
options once you actually identify what the real problem is.
Yeah. It reminds me of that saying, which I just was saying the other day in a conversation that I was having with someone, was knowledge is power, right? So the more, and that is, I guess, the theme of today's conversation is the knowledge that you have learned by getting granular, by asking why, by really figuring it out, has given you the power to figure out a solution to make your life easier. Now you have, not only do you have like less skin damage, but you also, have less anxiety around doing work, and you're feeling better about working on your clients', speeches, and getting more work satisfaction and better relationships with people, and you're understanding yourself and your emotions more. And oh, so great. Knowledge really is power.
It really is. And I think what's been so pleasantly surprising to me about this process and executive function coaching is that I came to it thinking that this was something strictly for my work life and very quickly realized it could apply to fun too. Like one of the first things I remember we talked about is the fact that you sew and you embroider. And I was like, oh my God, I also sew and I've been procrastinating on this quilt forever. And like, when am I going to get this quilt done? And realizing that all of these skills that we could talk about as it relates to work actually are really helpful at home, like in getting your home tasks done, and then also with fun stuff. Like there's a lot of times where I really want to work on an art project, I really want to work on a quilt, I really want to like do a painting, and I'm procrastinating on it. I'm like, why? That's weird. And then using those same skills that I would use for our executive coaching at work, I can then identify, oh, the reason why I'm not working on this painting is because my paints are like way too deep in the closet and it's a total pain to get them out of the closet. And if I just like move them to the front of the closet, or even better yet, just put them on my kitchen counter,
Yeah, where
then
you
I'm
see
going to use
them.
them.
Yeah. Speaking of out of sight, out of mind. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So I think it's been incredible to see how much all of these skills have really helped me in every aspect of my life.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing. So I feel like this conversation was just packed with so many awesome ideas. If you're listening and you're feeling a little bit like, wow, I can't do all this, just remember that this is the work of like a year and a half. And it is not something that Helena and you and I together came up with in a day. This was
Oh,
a
yeah.
evolution over time. So, but I really encourage everybody to at least try collecting some data, try learning from what works and what doesn't work, and then see where it takes you. You
Yeah.
might end up on a podcast.
You might end up on a podcast.
All right. So where can everybody find you?
Yeah, well, I'm online at helenabowen.com and I'm on TikTok as at Helena Speaking.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Helena. This was fantastic.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. My main takeaways from this conversation with Helena is a reminder that procrastination and task avoidance are not just task initiation and time management challenges. As the researcher Tim Pitchell showed in his studies, procrastination is usually rooted in emotions, and these emotions get us stuck or cause us to delay doing stuff. Through learning this for herself, Helena was able to come up with some really great strategies and approaches to getting her work done with less pain and less struggle. It's not perfect, but it's definitely better. Another takeaway that I think is really important to remember is that when our brains work differently than others, it means we might need to do things differently than others. Learning to be okay with this can be difficult work, but I know it's worth the effort. I see it in my clients, and I've seen it in myself. Thank you for sharing Focus Forward, which helps us spread the word about the power of executive function skills. Word of mouth keeps us on the air, so please keep sharing Focus Forward with your networks. We appreciate it so much. Don't forget to rate us wherever you listen, and leaving a written review on Apple somehow makes a big difference, makes it easier for people to find us. I got to do the research on that still to figure out why. You can sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. A million thanks to Sean Potts, my editor and producer, to Maggie Hickey, my sounding board and cheerleader, to Helena for sharing her story with us, and to Casey Davis for having me on her podcast, Struggle Care, back in December 2022.